As I said before, I don't have any disclosures to make. Again, today's presentation is entitled East Baltimore and the Neoliberal Impacts of Gentrification on Health. Let's go ahead and get started. So, what is gentrification? It's the transformation of neighborhoods from low to high value. This change has the potential to cause displacement along long-term residents and businesses. Gentrification is a housing, economic, and health issue that affects a community's history and culture and reduces its social capital. It often shifts a neighborhood's characteristics by adding new stores and resources in previously run-down neighborhoods. So overall, gentrification is not an isolated event. It's happening both nationally and globally. In many cases, people are forced to move. So our focus area for this study was East Baltimore. Development and displacement in East Baltimore has been occurring well over half a century, but today we're going to be focusing on the recent development project, which has spanned the time frame of 10 years and has had and continues to have an effect and an impact on its residents, community, and the city as a whole. This current project is a result of public-private partnership between Johns Hopkins and Baltimore City. This project seeks to redevelop disinvested communities. For example, rehabilitating old and vacant homes, including abandoned homes, and homes currently occupied by low-income residents. The goal is to attract new residents of a different race and class with amenities such as high-rise condos, new buildings such as the Hopkins Biopark, which is actually a research facility, and the newly built Henderson Hopkins School. This study intended to understand how the people and the residents living in the 88-acre portion that we're going to discuss have been affected by gentrification. So this picture that we have right here is just a snapshot of the time period of 1950 to 1960. The next couple of slides will show the progression of the development from 1950 all the way up to 2015. As we go through the next couple of slides, please note the drastic difference between the building up of Hopkins buildings and the lack of attention given to residential areas. This particular picture, as mentioned before, displays the 1950 to 1960 time period and shows the leveling of residential areas for the expansion of Hopkins. So just take that picture in. As you can see here, this is a more current picture. Resources are being invested into Hopkins buildings, and already existing residential buildings are being neglected. This is the most current and up-to-date picture of the development. Reports show that Hopkins has become more prominent in the area, and in the forefront you can see residential buildings that have been neglected and are now abandoned and boarded up. But in the background, you see Hopkins buildings. There are more of them. There's more resources being poured into it. And as you saw from the picture progression, Hopkins goes from simply looming in the background to becoming more forefront and imposing. Now we're going to get into our methodology. We had a structured questionnaire with open-ended questions, and we sampled from the 88-acre portion, the peripheries, neighborhoods, and we sampled from January to May 2015, so about a five-month period. So before administering the surveys, we let all potential participants know who we were, the purpose of the research. We emphasized that we would maintain confidentiality, and we emphasized the benefits of this reaction research to their communities. We also gave out business cards so that people could actually contact us if they had any questions or wanted to follow up. We also emphasized that the data would be brought back in the form of a report. In addition, we also did a secondary data analysis, as you can see here. We used data from the Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance. And for both the primary data source and the secondary data source, we looked at sociodemographics, housing, crime, and health. We also looked at reasons for moving, social capital, housing stability, and safety and health. So our study sample, we sampled from 5 community statistical areas, also known as CSAs. There were 104 households sampled, and there were a number and variety of responses to our probing questions. It's also important to note that while we're not a part of Johns Hopkins, there was a sense of fear or anxiety amongst the residents before actually conducting the survey. We emphasize that this is a listening project in which we are investing all the collected data back into the communities. It's important just to note this because historically there has been a negative perception by the residents of Hopkins because of unethical research practices and studies done by Hopkins. So as you can see here, this is just a picture, or a map I should say, of the community statistical areas that pull out right here are the neighborhoods and the CSAs that we actually sampled in. So we have Clifton Berea, Greenmount East, Madison East End, Old Town Middle East, and Patterson Park. I want to point out Patterson Park, which is geographically south of some of the CSAs that we sampled in, and I don't have a pointer or anything, but up in the north, I can't see too well, would be Roland Park, which is another CSA that we're going to look at. So our study sample, this is for East Baltimore communities. This is just an average of multiple CSAs in the area. And as you can see, it's predominantly African American, and there's an overall low median household income. So this is East Baltimore for you. Patterson Park, I mentioned before on the slide that it's geographically south, but as you can see, there are fewer African Americans. It's almost split 50-50 between Caucasians and African Americans. And there's a higher overall median income, so just note the variation in demographics for the CSA. When looking at Baltimore as a whole, Baltimore City, I should say, as a whole, it's predominantly African American, and there has been an increase in the percentage of people who are housing burdened. Housing burdened, just referring to residents spending up to 30% or more of their income on housing costs, so rent, mortgage, etc. When we get to Roland Park, which is geographically north, you can see that the picture just flips. It's predominantly Caucasian. There's an overall higher median income that's substantially higher than the income that we looked at previously in the CSAs. When looking at study demographics, this is just a breakdown. More than half of those that we surveyed were within the age ranges of 50 to 69 and were predominantly African American. It's also important to note that majority of those that we surveyed were renters. So I'll just give you a minute to look at those. When looking at current community statistical areas, that refers to where individuals are now currently living. Highlighted CSAs are where the majority of people are currently living. So you have Clifton Berea, Greenmount East, Old Town Middle East, and Patterson Park. Only 17% of those that we surveyed had actually stayed at that current address for more than 20 years. When looking at the previous community statistical areas, it's also referring to where individuals and residents used to live. And you can see a very similar pattern from the previous slide. Next, we're going to get into why people are moving, reasons for moving. To the left, you can see reasons for moving to the current address. All the themes are to the left, and to the right you see reasons for moving to the previous address. So there's a pattern. There's a lot of affordability, personal preference. I just want to highlight one particular reason, which is work. You see on the left work for Johns Hopkins employment, and work appears on both sides. So currently there's an initiative by Hopkins for a Live Where You Work campaign. So employees of Hopkins get actually discounted housing prices and rates to move to the city. So they're actually spending a bit less than what they would normally spend if they weren't actually moving forward for Hopkins. Next, we're going to look at reasons for neighborhood and family movement. You can just see the breakdown here. I also just want to point out one of the reasons, which on the right, which is county. When we're referring to county as residents who are looking to move to Baltimore County because there's a lack of affordable housing within the city. So those residents, they received housing vouchers so that they could move into the county. Those that we talked to that mentioned that county reason also said that they feel like they're being forced to move and that they don't really have a choice in the matter. When we get to affordability and housing burden, you can see that 63% experienced a change in affordability. When we're speaking about affordability, we're referring to it in such a way that affordability has become less, so people are not able to afford things as much. So you can see a large percentage of residents felt that way. In addition to being housing burdened, 15% of respondents reported experiencing housing burden. So, as you can see there. When we get to worry and health impact, a little over one-third of those who responded worried about having to move and said that it affected their health. So just to the right is a breakdown of the different conditions that they either had or were experiencing. When we get to social capital, 82% of participants said that they would like to be contacted for neighborhood improvement and organizing. So this just shows that residents want to be involved in their communities. They want to participate in this process. Next, we're just going to look at the question specifically, what do you think of the development? So looking at the previous slide of social capital, you're just going to see the disconnect and just the difference in responses as to what people feel about the development. We had three major themes: development, business neighborhood changes, and housing. Within each of those themes were sub-themes, and I'll go into those more in depth on the next couple of slides. So our first theme was development, and I'm just going to read a couple of the quotes. But first, this slide shows the sub-themes of development, community role, and government role. So first, let's look at development. That's why we fought so hard. The people thought they was coming back. So just referring to the displaced residents. Next, we're going to look at the government role. They, referring to Hopkins, got the government, the mayor, all in their pocket. You look at the system today, it's changed. It's corrupt. When you have a corrupt system, everything goes downhill. The government are liars. And then we're going to look at community role. Been doing this since I've been 19, referring to getting involved in the community and volunteering. There's no sense of community. So residents present their concerns however they feel, as though they're not being heard. Their concerns are brushed to the side most times by the government to serve powerful entities, in this case, Johns Hopkins, and leaving residents feeling distrustful of both Baltimore City government and Hopkins and developers. And as a consequence, it leaves communities fragmented. Continuing with the theme of development, we have work, job opportunity, and perception of Hopkins. What choice you got? Got to put a roof over our head. Would it be out here? Not easy being out here. Making us stay out here. It is what it is. Don't want to hire us. And that's just referring to finding work and making a decent living. When we get to perception of Hopkins, an elephant trying to navigate a china shop. Even if they crush something, they may feel nothing. So developers promised that residents would be able to have an opportunity to participate in the job market. However, people do not feel that this is actually happening. Next, we're going to look at the theme of business and neighborhood changes. Under this theme, we have the sub-themes of safety and crime, transportation, and business and neighborhood changes. When referring to safety, the people that we talked to felt as though safety was a concern. However, newer residents placed a greater emphasis and actually expressed that they believe that Hopkins acted as a buffer to the crime, as seen here. So Hopkins creates a safety and security zone because this is the heart of Hopkins. It needs to be bought and developed by Hopkins, then built up. Native residents were concerned about safety, but not to the degree that newer residents were, and actually placed an emphasis on Hopkins actually being a contributor to the crime. So that was their perception of Hopkins. When we get to transportation, there was a concern of just residents not being able to find transportation. So not connected to grocery stores, even if you drive. The market, Northeast Market, Whole Foods, Safeway. And then we get to business neighborhood changes. Businesses and some neighborhoods believe that the development would actually make things better, as seen in the quote here. I would like the changes to better the business. Next, we're going to get into the housing theme. Underneath the housing theme, we have landlord maintenance, race relations, and affordability. So the environment, of course, that we live in impacts our health, as seen here. It's horrible in here. I wouldn't tell anyone to move here. Housing sucks. I think the home makes us sick. It's unhealthy, roaches, unsanitary. For race relations, don't know if it does the doctors any residents and residents any good. What's the disconnect? Are you trying to get more distance from all the neighborhoods? See from who? That to me seems elitist. And then affordability. Paying $1,000 to live in the projects. So again, you can see that there's a subconscious and explicit narrative that Native residents are different from the people and are actually seen as something to be feared. And there's also an air of superiority and the implication that Native residents are not deserving of having decent living arrangements. So in conclusion, I just want to emphasize again that this study was intended to understand how people living in the peripheral neighborhoods feel about gentrification. Affected communities are predominantly African American. There's a lack of trust amongst residents and government and Hopkins. Individuals have a desire to stay and benefit from the development, as well as actively engage in their community and rebuilding. Individuals perceive that their health is negatively impacted by worry. There's an increase in housing instability overall, and there's a decrease in housing affordability. So some limitations of this study was our sample size. We would have liked to get into more neighborhoods, but because of just the housing structure, just referring to you either had to be let in to those neighborhoods or you had to know somebody to be able to access that particular community, that was a limitation. The responses in regards to rent and mortgage, so people were uncomfortable just talking about their financial situations. And lastly, perception of unsafety. So this could be seen in like the replication of this study. Residents continuously asked us to be safe, make sure that we're not going into too many different difficult or dangerous areas. So just to close, the lack of job opportunities for current residents feel as though they're not getting a chance in trying to access these resources. When we get to public health and policy implications, just a lack of access to affordable housing contributes to chronic stress and worry. Housing instability fragments communities and destroys social capital. Stable and affordable housing should be considered when creating policy. And just some next steps is to create a safe space for community members, encourage action research within our own research communities, and share the data collected within our neighborhoods. So these are just some additional resources. And I'd like to acknowledge and thank all the residents just for participating, and also Cheryl Knott of Benia for providing archived data. Thank you so much for listening.